This narrator advises that the listener digest the following as entertainment. The showrunners behind it are neither six-figure filmmakers nor professional critics. They are casually critical.
Welcome to Casually Critical, the podcast show starring two pals who love to talk about storytelling. I'm your host, Daniel Carpenter.
And I'm James Newton, your co-host. We are watching 2005's Thank You for Smoking, starring Aaron Eckhart. And I just wanted to let you guys know, the 99% of you that haven't seen it, there will be spoilers further on, and we're going to slap a giant skull and crossbones on that, just so you know the amount of risk that you're getting into, because they're spoilers. And without a doubt, you should know that that's what you're getting into.
Absolutely. Let's dive into Thank You for Smoking, James. Would you want to describe what this movie is about?
Absolutely. Thank You for Smoking is a film about a tobacco lobbyist who does his job very, very well. Goes about his days smooth-talking and pointing fingers and redirecting legislation and smiling all the while, but simultaneously is challenged with the struggle that many people face, which is raising their child. And in this case, it's a particularly interesting father-son relationship because he has no moral shame for the job that he does. So the real question that this movie poses from the beginning is, can this guy who is so morally ambiguous raise a child properly?
Yeah. The Nick Naylor works for Big Tobacco promoting smoking. And the first scene we get with him is with a guy who is known throughout the entire movie in both good guys and bad guys as Cancer Boy. This is a black comedy. You will laugh at things that you don't want to laugh at. You will laugh at things where you're like, why is this funny? It is funny because it is morbid. But I gotta say, James, the way I would describe this movie is tastefully edgy. This is an R-rated film, a commentary on capitalism, culture, big companies dominating certain markets, and laughing at the people who suffer for their industries while they themselves profit. I walked into this movie expecting to get what I've gotten for so many other movies with similar themes, which is commentary on, oh my gosh, capitalism isn't that good all the time. Or, you know, deconstructionist stuff, heroes that really realize, man, what have I become? But we touch on that, but in a way that is so tasteful, especially for an R-rated film. A lot of R-rated movies nowadays, I feel, need to justify their R rating. They're like, ah, we're rated R. Let's really lean into this. But here, it doesn't feel like they leaned into it so much as it just fits. The language choice, the content that's there, this does feel like an R-rated film, but it never feels too much. It never feels like, okay, that was a lot. Do you feel the same way, James?
Yes, definitely. And I think the things that I found the funniest about this film is the world that I stepped into, the world of hardball playing, cutthroat, morally ambiguous lobbyists and executives and government officials that have an agenda that doesn't really have an individual demographic in mind. It's just an agenda, and it's so separate from a human being, and it's so cold and so strange. And just seeing the way those characters live and the way that they talk, it's played up in such a fun and cartoonish way. For example, our main character, Nick Naylor, he always just has this devilish grin.
Yeah.
Whenever he knows that he's winning an argument. And he's probably the most grounded of these lobbyist characters. There are other characters in a similar world as him. One of them is an advocate for alcohol. Another one is an advocate for firearms. Another one is a big Hollywood exec, played by Rob Lowe, who I really enjoy in this movie.
Yeah.
They're all way out there in a very Parks and Recreation sort of way that just, I don't know, it simultaneously pokes fun at and gives insight to this world that is invisible that affects all of our decisions. These people that advocate for certain products and how they are presented.
Yeah.
I love that. That portion of it is really what was so quirky and enjoyable to me.
Yeah, there are a lot of themes in here that really remind me of if Casually Critical existed, God willing, on a massive scale and everyone knew about our show and someone wanted to lightly nudge some things in our direction, like commentating on influence, commentating on how you word things, how you influence the crowd, how do you influence the audience. There's a scene where Nick Naylor is talking to his son about how he does what he does. And he argues with his son. They're arguing about if chocolate ice cream is better than vanilla, as an example. And he says an argument that makes his son go, "Dad, that's a terrible argument." And he says, "I know, son, but I'm not trying to win you over. I'm trying to win them over." And there were a few times in that where I went, "Was that for us? Was that, did someone, did Jason Reitman, who directed and wrote this, did he know that Casually Critical would be a thing?"
Yeah. It's definitely, this movie, in terms of the writing and the themes, it's a good 50 feet away from the actual story. There's a huge distance between the themes of this film and the actual things going on. The characters are all scummy, terrible people for the most part. The themes, well, it's not really about the things that they're doing. It's more about what, Daniel?
I think this is an amazing, I think it's about communicating a message by talking around it. This is a movie that should be pro-smoking. I mean, the title is Thank You for Smoking. We are following a guy whose job it is to lobby for big tobacco as their foremost spokesperson. He spins words. He manipulates the truth like a bunch of origami paper. He bends it to his will. He manipulates and deceives and has a very dangerously relativistic look at truth. And yet, this is a very strong anti-smoking movie. And I think one of the basic examples of that is the simple truth that throughout this entire movie, not a single person ever lights up. We never see a cigarette. We're alluded to much later in the movie that Nick Naylor has and does smoke. But whenever he checks his pockets and pulls out a box of cigarettes, it's empty. Whenever he is talking to a guy who's known as one of the big guys in terms of tobacco and consumes it, he has a cigar in his mouth, but it's never lit. The simple fact that this movie is all about smoking and how awesome it is and how this Nick Naylor fellow is trying to win people over. We never see a single cigarette. We never see it. I think that is a power of subtlety that Hollywood has been missing recently, where instead of trusting the audience to say, "You know what? I really feel like smoking is bad after watching that movie." You know, this, it's such a nuanced way of doing it. You know, it's like if I were to make a movie about, yeah, drinking's great, drinking's fine, consume alcohol, be drunk all the time, why not? And then have a single character never actually drink alcohol. All they do is talk about it and all that. It's just, it's so rich.
It does make us feel like intelligent, discerning consumers whenever we come into contact with a movie that delivers its themes in such a way. And I think the relevance of this film is only becoming more and more apparent with the political environment here in the United States. The separation of morality from work, the separation of morality from politics, the separation of morality from your family life. all of those things. How do people vote? Do they vote for themselves? Do they vote for those that need to be advocated for? Or do they just vote in a way that says, let's give everybody the opportunity to indulge their nihilistic desires in whatever way they want? You can destroy yourself if you like, because it's America. That's what this movie says. But it doesn't tell us to go one way or the other. It just says, hey, this exists. America's the most free country. You're free to shoot anything, drink anything, smoke anything, do anything, because this is a free country. Take it or leave it, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And it presents it in such a great hands-off way.
And the simple fact of, if Jason Reitman ever tried to make it more clear that capitalism bad, smoking bad, I would have none of it. I would be so fatigued. I would think to myself, oh my gosh, I have heard this so many times. Even I briefly mentioned this in our Top Gun Maverick review last week, but I don't think I got my point fully across. A lot of our films have been promoting a lot of various political agendas. And obviously, I used to think that films shouldn't ever promote an agenda, but I'm starting to realize that everyone has an agenda, whether they're trying to promote it or not. It's going to come across in your work. But what you can do is make sure you're inserting ideas into a film that respect your audience and respect the other side, whatever that other side might be. I am so sick and tired of my movies providing me with a one-sided viewpoint of all these hot-button political topics without adding anything new to the conversation. And I will say this, James, and I want to know if you agree with this or not. Thank You for Smoking is an excellent macro lens at the world of capitalism and work-life balance, but Severance is the grounded lens. I think Severance and Thank You for Smoking are in the same league, but they're on opposite spectrums of that league. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Severance I think you're right.
Gritty and dark. This is comedic and large scale.
Yeah. We're a lot of our time is spent in sunny, golden lit rooms, laying back, having conversations, usually someone scowling at Nick Naylor, but it's all in the bag. He's the best fast talking cigarette advocate in the entire world. And nothing's ever going to compromise that, as far as we know in the non-spoiler section. There's such a lightheartedness that makes me sad. The film is tragic because of how lighthearted and laid back this movie is. It's the funniest tragic film I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah. It definitely, I think it knows that it's portraying itself as candy-coated toxin.
Yes.
You know, like you mentioned, the lightheartedness, the sunny locations. It's like, yeah, but also what's happening in these lighthearted locations? Oh, we're promoting smoking. Great.
Here's an example. Nick Naylor talks about traveling for a little bit, and he says, I love to travel in the standard class seating on airplanes. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
And I do that because I want to meet my consumers. And if I can convince one person on the airplane to start smoking, then that will have paid for a year of my salary. And I'm just like, so many things you said were so wrong. And yet here I am chuckling and shaking my head at the outrageousness of this. Like
it's
he
wholesome.
Shakes his hand with a guy on the airplane as he's narrating. And I'm like, that guy's going to die of lung cancer. Here we go.
But I think it's also a great commentary on morality, because let's remove the context of him using that opportunity to convince someone to smoke. The idea that, you know what? I could sit first class, but I don't want to do that. I want to meet the people that my job entails. I think everyone can get behind that. You know, there's stories of presidents or bigwig CEOs that would ride economy. And we look at that as, wow, they are purposely lowering themselves to our level. And he's doing it with intentionality. So that's a value that a lot of people can get behind. It's just the context of it is so misapplied. It calls attention to itself in a very deliberate way, in a very clever way.
Yes, exactly. It's just another layer of the joke, because the moral gray has you turning and turning left, right, backwards, dead end. You're stuck in this labyrinth of just like moral quandaries that cannot be answered with a single sentence, with a single strand of thought. You're so deep in the gray at this point, you just can't help but laugh.
Yeah. I got to say, two things behind the scenes of this movie that stood out. One is Aaron Eckhart's portrayal as Nick Naylor. Apparently, Christopher Nolan saw this, and this was the reason why he casted him as Harvey Dent in The Dark Knight, because he loved his portrayal of Nick Naylor so much. But
I was wondering, because there are a few people in that in the Batman movies that make an appearance in Thank You for Smoking, one of them being Rachel. I don't remember
Rachel.
Her name.
Katie Holmes.
Thank you.
She actually, so Batman Begins came out the same year, I believe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so weird. Here's the other thing. This doesn't really have to do with the topics we're talking about, but I just want to mention it because Jason Reitman, he seems like a very intentional man. I'm not just talking about this movie. There's a behind the scenes fact that I really hope is true on IMDb, where apparently every single actor in this movie was Jason's first choice. This was his primary pick. According to this trivia fact, the reason he was able to get all of his first picks immediately was because he wrote all of them a long personal note as to why they would be perfect for the role.
That's great. I love that.
But there's like, I can feel that heart and craft in this movie. There's, as I mentioned, there's edginess, but it's with a purpose. It's with a point. It's not solely anti-systemic. It's not, oh, it's edgy boy hours. And it isn't, oh, I have an R rating, so might as well just go all out, right? Let's show off everything. But Jason, if I may speak for him, I don't know the man personally, he seems to say, you know what? I want this movie to be edgy as far as its own story will allow it to take it reasonably. And if there's nothing else that I need in my movie, I'm not going to include it. I will include only what the story warrants and let that speak for itself. And that's powerful for me. That's powerful.
There are other small nods that happen outside of the dialogue that I think tell me, that tilt the hand of the director to me. One of them being the main antagonist. He's not an antagonist. No. He's an antagonist in my heart. The kind of overlord of Big Tobacco that's portrayed.
BR?
Yeah, BR. Not BR.
J.K.
Sorry,
Simmons.
The captain. The captain.
Oh, got it.
The captain is, he's always in this sort of plantation sort of setting, and everyone that is serving him is of a minority. And the lighting is like this sickly greenish yellow. There's just lots of little, small, subtle nudges that tell me specifically that the captain is not a great guy, even though he is an ally of our main protagonist. There's a lot of things that are just telling me, okay, this guy's a terrible guy. I think I know what this director actually thinks about Big Tobacco. And it's just things like that everywhere. And I feel like I feel like neither of us can explain it anymore other than to just go see it.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, out of 5 stars, how would you rate Thank You for Smoking?
I'm going to give this 5 stars.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know what value 5 stars means anymore, because I think out of all of us, I've given movies 5 stars more than you have on this podcast. I don't see any glaring issues. So much of this movie services the story, and this might just be one of my favorite comedies of all time because of its theme, because of its execution, and all the other reasons we just talked about. James, I don't know if you'll give it 5 stars as well. I'm a little scared that I went first, but what would you rate this movie?
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
A 4 out of 5?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting.
Not because of any particular filmmaking lowlights that it has in it. I think all of the praise that I'm giving it is due to the amount of trust entitled to the audience. I think there is some richness with some of the character dynamics, specifically Nick and his son, that we may talk about in the spoiler section that I don't feel like gets fully fleshed out, and it might be on purpose. So okay. I'm not so sure.
Well, that's an interesting transition, but let's head into our spoiler review.
Want to join the conversation? Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Casually Critical Podcast to get the inside scoop on future episodes. Feel free to message us on either platform to join in the casual correspondence or provide feedback on the show. Now it's time to dive into our spoiler review.
Well, got through the foggy section of the spoiler-free review, but now we can have maybe a more secondhand discussion. James, let's talk about the ending. Let's talk about the plot, shall we?
Okay.
I guess I'm just really curious to know. 4 stars. Usually what I find with you is you give 4.5 stars to a movie you really like, but there's a few flaws in it that hold it back from a 5, and 4 stars to a movie that you aren't a complete fan of, that while the filmmaking might be ideal, there are some deeper issues you have. So I don't know if I'm correct on all that discerning, but I'm really interested to know, what are the deeper issues you have with this movie?
So I do want to explain my ranking system here.
Okay.
Because it does come down to personal preference. A 5 out of 5 hits all the right notes for me personally. Hits all the right vibes. It's got the right themes and stories and things and really impacts me as a person. 4.5 out of 5 is something that hits all the right notes with me, but has some flaws. A 4 is something that doesn't necessarily fit my vibe as a film. This isn't a movie that I would say, oh yeah, whenever I think of genre, whenever I think of things that I want to make something like Thank You for Smoking. No, I don't. I'm never going to make a movie like this. I'm not a smart enough writer artist to tell a story like this. And because of the present darkness of it, I think it just doesn't fit my sensibilities. But a 4 out of 5 is always something that I will keep returning to. And the reason I will keep returning to it is because of the questions that it sparks in my brain, the way that it makes me think. These are the things that we keep coming back to in Casually Critical, is did the movie challenge you in some way? Did it make you think? And this really got me thinking about there's victory. The hero wins and we're celebrating, but smoking is better off for it. Why are we celebrating?
I don't know if smoking's better off for it. He does betray his boss in the end. He reflects back to that conversation he has with his son.
He does.
The Academy of Tobacco Studies, or the Institute of Tobacco Studies, is closed. Big Tobacco seems to have fallen. Nick seems to have stayed on top, running his own marketing firm. So I'm a little confused why that's a victory for Big Tobacco.
I think the court case was a big victory for Big Tobacco. I think that the actual like fallout of Big Tobacco that would follow later was not a result of anything inside of the film, from what I can understand. It was just an inevitable fall for Big Tobacco. Nick Naylor was not the person responsible for taking down Big Tobacco. If that were the case, then I would have different opinions about this movie. I wouldn't feel...
Yeah.
I don't know how I'd feel about it.
There was actually an alternate ending that Jason Reitman had filmed as well, where in the courtroom, which honestly, in the context, I'm so glad Jason went with the better ending. But the ending is his son starts to light up, or is about to light up a cigarette, and Nick kind of swats it out of his son's hand. And then he has to kind of walk away with his tail in between his legs out of the courtroom. But that would not, in my opinion, that would not have worked. That's not...
No.
Nick is very poised. And you were talking about the writing. This writing, man, there are so many characters in movies that we are told are very brilliant and smart and can talk their way out of anything, but then I never see it. You know? Like Loki in the TV series Loki. It's like, oh, he's a silver-tongued guy. But everyone in the Loki show is like, yeah, you're an idiot. Just get out of my way. You're a pushover. Why are you here? Oh, Loki, you deceitful man. They treat him like a house pet instead of a genuine psychopath.
Loki is a little kitty cat in that show.
Yeah, and a lot of fans are like, oh my gosh, Loki's so cute. I'd love to marry him. And I'm like, I don't think you understand. Movies have this way of making us sympathize with anyone, even people we really shouldn't. And this movie is a perfect example of that. Thank You for Smoking. We are with a genuinely bad person. And the director and writers at no point ever sugarcoat that. In their own world, people are so upset with Nick Naylor and what he's done to the point where one of them kidnaps him.
Yep.
And I gotta say, Little Homemade Spice, is it cliche that your character is a big political character and gets kidnapped? I don't know if it's cliche. It's not shocking. But what is clever is how they what they do to him inside the van. They start cutting off his clothes. And I'm like, what are they doing? And they just start slapping on all these patches. And each one represents X amount of packs per day. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how this is going to end, but this is clever. I like it. Like, there's a deliberateness. Again, it just adds to the theme. It services the theme. It's like, here's a taste of your own medicine. Is this going to change the hero? Yes, for better, because he goes, ah, I can spin this. I'm the victim. So let's, you know.
Exactly. It's always a spin. It's always a, how can I make this expand the kingdom of me? Mm. It's shocking to me that the log line of this movie is about Nick Naylor being a spokesperson for Big Tobacco. And his job is to spin on behalf of cigarettes, but he has to also balance that with being a role model for his 12-year-old son.
Yeah.
A log line being a one or two sentence summary of the movie that is included in the pitch. And it's on the IMDb page, and it's just the quickest way to summarize the main plot and the hook and the character.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like the log line is fulfilled in this movie?
I did walk in with the impression that, yeah, this isn't quite like the log line. You know, his son isn't saying, Dad, should I smoke? Even though that is a big question brought up towards the end. And I think that's a brilliant example of him trying to ignore his own morals in order to present this persona. But his son, it's more about him influencing his son and the way his son sees the world and the way his son can twist the truth just like his father. I think the log line is a perfect description, but it's not the description you initially think about. He's trying to remain a role model for his son. What happens at the end? He gets ousted. The reporter he sleeps with just fully backstabs him. And while he's at this low point, his son's belief in him keeps him going. His son still sees him as a god, is what his ex-wife says. And so, yeah, it is about him remaining a role model for his son, just not in the realm of smoking. What do you think?
I think it absolutely fulfills the log line.
Mm.
The specific wording is, while trying to remain a role model for his 12-year-old son. Oh, he's a role model, all right. He role models his son into a manipulating spinster just like him. He wins debate championships at the end of the movie. He continues to uphold his father to such a high standard. And that's another reason why this movie is a tragedy.
Yeah.
Because this kid is going to become another morally gray, spinning, debating, the world is just a ball of twine that I can unravel and twist at my will. Is that a good thing in the movie? Yes. Is it a bad thing in real life? Probably.
Yeah. James, I'm interested to know this character of Nick Naylor. We're talking about log lines, but let's talk bigger scale. Let's talk character arcs. Does Nick Naylor go through an arc in this movie?
I don't think so. I think Nick Naylor is a flat character. He has a flat arc, and in that, for that reason, he is a, I don't remember the specific term, but he's the kind of protagonist that influences everyone around him as opposed to the world influencing him. So an example of this kind of character would be Bilbo Baggins. Bilbo Baggins remains a tea-loving, cautious, quiet, quaint character, I would say, throughout the story of The Hobbit. I think maybe his transformation is different in the movies. I don't remember. I haven't seen the second and third in a long time. But the biggest things that Bilbo Baggins brings to the table is things that he's already had. It's not the change that he undergoes through the world that makes him a hero. It's the values of the Shire that he brings to the world that makes the place world a better place.
Mm.
A video essay that talks about this really well actually talks about Paddington being a flat character.
Yeah.
Paddington being a children's book character and also has two movies directed by Peter Jackson, which I still need to see. But I think Nick Naylor's a flat character. I think he goes through a flat arc. He remains the same. If he would have changed the way he was influencing his son, if he would have changed the way he approached his professional life and his moral life and his family life, then there would be an arc there. But yeah, he doesn't really change. It's the people around him that change.
And call me messed up for saying this, but I'm glad he doesn't. Because I've seen so much. Writers will make this amazing character, and then at the very end, they won't stick the landing. They'll make him completely different. They'll make him so powerful on his own, and then they'll just completely compromise that suddenly in one of the final scenes. Where they go, oh, maybe I am bad. Oh, who am I? And I don't know who they are, other than more lame to watch.
Yep.
And that's me as a viewer talking. I don't want to see Nick Naylor become incredibly altruistic and give back and become friends with Cancer Boy and hold his hand. You know, I don't want that.
Exactly.
I want him to be a scumbag, and he is still by the end of the movie. He's just different.
That was not the tone that was established in the movie. The tone of the movie was never, Nick Naylor is a guy that totes cigarettes, but are cigarettes okay? And how is this going to affect the way he feels about his family? No, it's like, hey, Nick Naylor's a scumbag. Check this out. Watch him do a flip. Whoa. Oh, now he's going to sell cigarettes jumping off an airplane. Yay. Is he going to do it? Oh, he did it.
Yay.
And he still sells cigarettes. He's still a terrible guy in a thematic way. He doesn't sell cigarettes in the end, obviously.
Right.
But okay, everybody, thank you for sticking around and listening. If you haven't seen Thank You for Smoking, go check it out. Even if we've spoiled it for you, it's worth the ride.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening and stay tuned for our casual correspondence next week. And I've been James Newton.
And I'm Daniel Carpenter.
And thank you for smoking.
You're welcome.